Ali's going to talk. Okay, Ali's going to talk about speak eyes. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Right? Is it correct?
Speakeasy.
Speakeasy. Oh,
It's very hard to
okay.
pronounce. I'll explain why.
Okay, so this is speakeasy, an Argentine LLM for supernova science. Just please take it away.
Great. Thanks so much. So, I first want to start off by saying thanks very much to the organizers for having me and for just having this session to begin with. I've already learned a lot, and it's funny. We have talked already about how the landscape is changing very quickly. We are all running into similar issues and we are addressing them in slightly different ways. So it's already been very thought-provoking for me to have seen the talks today. So yeah, really appreciate it. I want to talk about the way that we are trying to solve some of these problems in the domain of supernova science. I'll talk about why we might want an LLM agent, where we're at so far, some of the things that we've run into, and then where we're going. And feel free to stop me and ask questions if the organizers will allow for it. Okay, so a little bit of context. I study supernovae. These are the explosive deaths of massive stars. They explode in many different ways, but really what we observe in the night sky is a little pixel that changes in brightness as a very distant star explodes. We see nothing, the star explodes, and then a pixel lights up. And all of the physics that we infer about the explosion comes from how that single pixel changes in brightness. So it's a very hard problem. It's a very ill-posed problem. And right now, we are at an interesting inflection point in supernova science. So we have gotten better and better at building automated tools to find these explosions. And yet, we are getting worse and worse at studying them physically. So, just to make this point a little more visceral, here is a video of the number of explosions that astronomers have discovered in the night sky since the 1800s. So, if we play the movie forward, you see that maybe not surprisingly, before modern technology, it was very hard to see anything but really the brightest explosions. As time goes on, we find that the sky is completely covered in these explosions. And then at about the turn of the century, our telescopes come online, CCD technology picks off, and we're now finding many thousands or tens of thousands of supernovae per year. There's a telescope that's going to come online later this year in October, and it will find 10 million supernova candidates every night, little pixels that flicker in brightness. And there are not enough humans interested in supernova science in the world to be able to parse all that data and to figure out which ones are the most interesting to study in detail before the explosions fade away. And so, right now, this has become a game of triaging. What we do is we have these massive survey telescopes. They scan the sky and they detect many explosions. And then we have smaller targeted telescopes that choose to look at particular locations in the sky to higher cadence. So they take many more images across many different nights to get a better sense of what's going on in the explosions that we care most about. And so a collaboration that I'm closely involved in is called the Young Supernova Experiment, or YSE, pronounced Yeezy. And Yeezy is interested in studying the youngest explosions that we can find. The idea is that the physics of what's happening in the explosion is encoded in information from the first couple of days of the explosion. And so basically, Yeezy scans the skies and points to specific supernovae that we find most interesting at the discretion of the supernova scientists, and then we schedule it for follow-up. So right now, what gets done is we have a page where people can look at different explosions that have been seen. There's a bunch of metadata that provides information on the properties of the supernova as we currently know. There's information about the brightness over time and its position in the sky. And on the left, we have an Excel spreadsheet that humans use to schedule who per night, usually grad students, is going to sift through the new candidates and determine which ones are the most interesting to schedule follow-up. You can imagine that this is an incredibly laborious process, It's incredibly inefficient and it will not scale to new instruments. And so we're trying to figure out a way to make this more efficient. Can we automate the organization and inference of physics in the phenomena that we discover nightly? And that led us to the use of LLMs. This was the first demo of the Speakeasy, which is what we call the LLM running within the Young Supernova experiment. I built it at the end of 2023 with a grad student at Harvard. And at the beginning, it really just looked like calls to OpenAI. And so there was a back-end database where we had our public data, and you could ask it a given question about something in the database, like how many transients were discovered, supernovae were discovered in the last 60 days, and it would translate that to a SQL query, execute on the back-end database, and retrieve the answer. You can then ask follow-up questions, and of course, there's context in the chat. Now, this is very old hat, but at the time, it seemed very promising. And let's wait for it to give that answer. Okay. And we were at the time trying to push it to adopt more flexible queries. So really think about answering questions, constructing SQL queries that require multiple joins that were outside of the training set. So here I'm asking it ranges in the sky. I'm asking it about the types of supernovae. I'm asking it to retrieve the names, and this was not in the training set. And it takes a while, but it does okay. So it starts giving the results. This also did not scale super well because of how much it was costing to use OpenAI's API. So we moved to an open source framework. This is the current setup of the Speakeasy. So it runs through an interface called Open Web UI, highly recommended. It's free and very useful. Anytime a user asks a question, it first retrieves via semantic search the most similar, most relevant publications that have been embedded in advance via a backend database. And then the LLM decides what backend tools to call to conduct analyses on the data. So the tools have been preloaded. They're basic analysis tools that supernova scientists use to understand whether an event is interesting or not. It also has the capability of doing web browsing and retrieving additional papers. And then all of the results of the tool calls and the web browsing results are provided as context to construct its final response. So I mentioned we moved toward open source. Originally, we were just using OpenAI, but now we are going through Ollama on the back end. And the really nice thing about Ollama is that we are not constrained to a specific model. As the models get better every week, we can swap it out. Each one has different strengths and weaknesses. Some are better at reasoning, some are better at tool calling, and it's been really interesting to swap them out on the back end and see how the responses evolve. I want to mention this. Guided generation or structured generation is a piece that I think is known to people building these models for users, but is not super super well used for the practitioners of some of these models. Structured generation, I think, is incredibly valuable for reducing hallucinations, ensuring output of a particular format, and as we think about guiding LLMs toward output that is relevant to our physical domains, I think it's going to become absolutely essential. So I would love to see more work in it. And then we are trying to hit a moving target. As the models improve, we have improved very rapidly as well. So some of the pieces that we've added in are memories that are user-specific, citations for both the backend papers and the web sites that are searched. It can now interact and embed plots and other images that it generates from its analysis in the chat, and it runs a series of validation scripts via prompt foo. I can talk more about that if people have questions. I want to end by just mentioning that right now in supernova science, we don't really have the data to train a model to get good at understanding the connection between language and the data sets that we collect. And I think that this is the primary limitation for adoption of LLM models in at least supernova science, maybe other physical domains as well. And so there have been attempts in the past to try and align text and associated modalities of information like images. We have a couple papers trying to associate this information, but we also just don't have the text built up that is associated with specific objects. And this is a very big challenge because when we ask an LLM to give a summary for a supernova and whether we think it's interesting and what kind of analysis needs to be done, it just doesn't really have the training set to understand what a human would do in that context. So, with that in mind, I am now pushing toward building up that corpus to be able to enhance our natural language queries to allow it to do more flexible hypothesis generation. And so this website is in very early stages, but it's now live, the transientrecommender.org. And it's just a website where you can sift through supernovae, add comments about what you think is going to be interesting. And we are launching this very soon within the Young Supernova Experiment to really start collecting up the text data for what humans might want to do with a particular supernova so that we can work toward adding this as relevant context with the speakeasy in future versions. And then this is Future Directions. We are expanding toward a suite, many other speakers have mentioned this, but a suite of different LLMs that are specialized for given tasks. We have found that when we overly constrain our primary LLM for SQL queries, for example, it starts to struggle at web browsing or Python function calling. So that is where we are moving next. We hope to have a prototype online very soon. And I just want to shout out that initially we were doing this all using free compute resources. Luckily, we have secured a grant from Amazon AWS, and they will be supporting the GPUs that will enable this running in the next generation of speakeasy. And so I will just say that I think Speakeasy is going to be incredibly useful for future astronomical surveys for real-time analysis as kind of a level one pass through the data before humans have a look at it. We are working on building text annotated events to better teach a model about what we think is interesting. We are building up the benchmarks to validate the open source models that are rapidly changing. And if you are interested in collaborating, please reach out. Thanks very much for your attention.
Thank you, Alex, for the talk. Let's take a question from the audience. Is there any question? There is. Okay, Lloyd, please go ahead.
Alex. I want to ask the tool calling that you have, when do you know when to start using the tool calling? Is it just, are you finding like a certain relevance level when you're calling your vector database, or what makes you actually decide to go to the web search instead of just doing the retrieval?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, when a chat is started, the backend database of publications is always queried to give it relevant context to start the conversation. So that is something that is hard-coded in. We found that that really improves its ability to answer follow-up questions. In all of the subsequent questions, the model has basically a chain of thought reasoning where it, via structured output, decides, do I need to call a tool and why do I need to call this tool? And one of those tools is searching the web if it believes that it doesn't have enough information in its backend publications to answer the user.
Okay, so how does it make that determination? Is it like, is this like a relevance score from the vector DB? Like what's kind of the cutoff there?
For the embedded publications.
For leaving the embedded publications. So I know that you do your RAG on the embedded publications. You get that to generate a chain of thought, and then when you say I don't, you're saying it figures out that it doesn't have enough information from the vector database, but how does it determine that it doesn't have enough information from the vector database?
Purely through the chain of thought prompting.
Okay.
We didn't
Oh, okay.
end up encoding a similarity score on the back end. You could imagine like a relevance score. You could imagine coding something like that in with a particular relevance. But all we did was set up the chain of thought prompting to say, if when you believe you have enough information to answer the question, don't call any more tools. And then there's like a stop gap where it says, like, now I'm done calling my tools. Now I'll move to the next stage, which is constructing the final output, which I'll send to the user.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks.
Yep.
Any more questions? So I have a quick one about your slide 12, so the one before this one. Yeah, because you're talking about this is actually really interesting, talking about creating data, or like we heard this already in the previous presentations, that how preparing data before even training or doing RAG, it's relevant. So in this case, like, is this web page open to like astronomers or scientists in general? Like, it's just public, or do you have like some experts that are like requested to interact with this page? And so how do you regulate this?
That's a really good question. This is early days for this leg of the project, but the hope is that to build up a sizable corpus, it will be open to the general public. We have seen a lot of successes in citizen science projects in astronomy more broadly. And there's a ton of expertise in how you calibrate the responses to a particular user. So there are data analysis methods whereby you can identify this user tends to give comments on a supernova that has a low similarity to the comments left by users that we believe to be experts in the field. And so, in those ways, you can downweight specific sets of comments and tags from different users and kind of recalibrate in the end. The hope is that as we scale up, there will kind of be a regression toward the mean. Phenomenon whereby just the sheer scale of the responses that we're getting allows you to kind of average out the variations in, people who think nothing is interesting, people who think everything is interesting, and we will really be using the experts to anchor those responses. So within the Young Supernova Experiment, we're chatting about an early rollout so that we at least have several experts that are regularly using the page. But yeah, the hope is that this will become a broader effort than that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never really thought about this as like if you could use like public to kind of feed these kind of pages. So just to have like a little bit more of intuition about this, like which kind of like feedbacks or like inputs can you get from like non-experts that is still like sort of reasonable? Is it about like properties of the image itself, like lumen intensity of the pixels, or is it really about, let's say, quantitative? Yeah, I'm just trying to figure, yeah, which kind of feedback you can get.
It's a really good question. That is actively evolving. We're trying to figure out what is reasonable to ask of people who are not in the field. At the same time, that page, if you go to it now, I've set up a very preliminary demo where I walk new users through how do I identify different types of transients? So this, maybe you can't see my cursor, this red and green set of points here is the light curve. It changes brightness, it gets brighter, it gets dimmer. And that shape is very predictable for certain science cases, for certain types of explosions. So the tutorial basically walks people through, here's what it looks like if we think this thing is going on. Here's what it looks like if we think this thing is going on. If it doesn't look like these types, then mark it as weird. And citizen science projects in the past have actually shown with remarkable accuracy that, like, A, members of the general public want to engage in science efforts. So they are very active on these platforms. And then B, their responses are actually really good if you provide them some basic guidance about what they should be looking for. So I really think that that is where we should be going instead of just hoping that the couple of experts that we rely on to do this science normally will build up the corpus sufficient to train an LLM to do something similar.
Right, this is pretty cool. Yeah. It's kind of like you're making this as an interactive game with like the whole
Totally.
population.
Yeah,
Okay,
that's right.
Yeah, just wondering whether anything like that could be even possible with particle physics as well. But this sounds really super fun.
Cool. I'd be happy to chat more about
Yeah.
it.
So I don't know if Raghav maybe had another question. I don't know, but maybe we're running out of time. Or
Yeah, I mean, it was a great talk. I think we have, we should, I think we have run out of time, but I'll reach out
fair enough.
later. Yeah, great. Okay.
All right. So let's thanks Alex again.
Thanks
This is
for
really
having me.
cool. And yeah, we move to the last presentation of the workshop. That is from Maria Rosario. And I see she's already sharing. I don't know, it's still loading for me. Okay.